When I was in grade school, we were given IQ tests. Our parents were then given the results, along with expectations of success in life. My brother thought the test rather foolish and ticked the boxes randomly. Needless to say, my parents almost needed counselling after the next parent-teacher meeting. That is, until they learned the reason for my brother's apparent poor IQ. The idea that IQ determines outcome has been eroded and is now thought to contribute only 20% towards life success. So how about the other 80%? And are those factors caught or taught? Stand by, Go Healthy for Good starts right now. I'm Dr. Nerida. Welcome to Go Healthy for Good. When it comes to success in life, how important is emotional health? In their Science of Happiness series, Sol Pancake wanted to know what comes first, happiness or success. Watch.
Would you like some snacks?
Oh, yum.
Yes, exactly. Would you like any snacks or any?
Yes, all of them.
Oh, right. By all means. In order to be happy, you need to be successful. Thank you. If you work hard, if you're good enough, eventually your efforts are going to be recognized and rewarded. Well, what if I told you you had it backwards? That being successful doesn't lead to happiness, but rather, happiness leads to success. You need a minute to process that? It's fine. I'll wait. It's true. Happy people are better at problem solving, figuring out new options, and being creative. Statistically, happy people perform better with marriage, friendships, income, work performance, and health. I kid you not, someone somewhere figured that out. I don't know them, but here. We wanted to see if we could prove it ourselves here in our lab. We gathered a selection of volunteers and we split them into two groups, a control group and an experimental group. For the experimental group, we tried to change their mood with something called positive affectivity. That's science for we affected them positively. Would you like some snacks? Would you like any snacks or any?
Yes, all of them.
Oh, go for it then. By all means. We have a video queued up for you that we'd like you to check out.
Okay.
Yeah. We'd also like to thank you for coming in and sharing your time with us. So we'd like to offer you a gift card.
Sweet.
Yeah. A gift card for you as another, yes, token of our appreciation. For the control group, we gave them nothing. Then we gave everybody the same problem-solving exercise. We gave everybody 10 minutes. We have a little puzzle for you.
Okay.
So, we have this corkboard, and a candle, and a box. Inside this box are tacks and matches. Your puzzle, should you choose to accept it, is keeping this corkboard upright. You have to somehow affix this candle to the board in such a way that when you light it and let it run down completely, none of the wax would drip on the table, on the support, the floor, anything like that. Does that make sense?
Okay.
Let's wait and see if it does. On today's show, we have Sean, one of our favorite expert guests, and for the special series, Phil is making a spectacular dessert. And today is step one in that process, so be sure to join us for all four shows. But first, the news. In the headlines today, what's to stop cognitive impairment and dementia? Are teens afraid of missing out? And behavioural intervention for migraines. Metabolic syndrome is associated with an increased risk of mild cognitive impairment and progression to dementia. Metabolic syndrome includes having three of the following: high blood sugar, high cholesterol and blood fats, high blood pressure, and a large waistline. These are known to increase the risk of heart attacks, diabetes and strokes, and now of dementia. Follow-up of the Singapore Longitudinal Aging Study cohort shows that having metabolic syndrome increased the risk of mild cognitive impairment by almost 50%, and that subsequent progression to dementia is increased 4 or 5 times higher than those who do not have metabolic syndrome. So if you're aging, why not aim to keep those metabolic risk factors well away? Teens using social media suffer from a new syndrome, fear of missing out, or FOMO. The Australian Psychological Society has been conducting an annual national survey of stress and well-being in Australia. Latest findings indicate that a half of all teens suffer from FOMO, and the greater the use of social media, the higher the risk. They fear that their friends are having more rewarding experiences than or are having fun without them. 2 in 5 teens felt a sense of burnout with the constant connectivity of social media. Not that the use of social media is all bad, since they also reported that social media enabled stronger relationships, more effective goal setting, the ability to seek help, and feeling connected to a global community. So teens, overuse of social media contributing to stress, depression, or anxiety in your life? Relaxation techniques and cognitive behavioral therapy are useful tools for reducing and managing recurrent migraine headaches. A small London study has found that just 3 therapy sessions can reduce stress, migraine frequency, and help to manage a migraine once it's started. This is consistent with previous studies that show CBT in combination with medication has an important role to play for both adults and children who struggle with chronic migraines that can severely impact quality of life. So if you have migraines and haven't tried CBT yet, there's another option. I'm Dr. Nerida McKibben, and that's today's Health News. Our guest today is Dr. Neil Medley. He's an internal medicine physician with a special interest in mental health and how to optimize your brain. He's authored the book Lost Art of Thinking, How to Improve Emotional Intelligence and Achieve Peak Mental Performance, something that I'm sure we're all interested in. We met in our studio in San Antonio, and he begins by defining emotional intelligence quotient, or EQ.
EQ is emotional intelligence, and emotional intelligence actually has more to do with your success and happiness than even general intelligence does. Basically what it is just knowing your emotions and understanding them, as well as understanding the emotions of others and responding to those emotions in a healthy way.
So what you're suggesting is someone with a low EQ might just ride the waves of their emotions rather than controlling them or understanding where they're at?
Yes, exactly. So both groups, whether you have high or low emotional intelligence, you're still going to have emotions. But those with low emotional intelligence are managed by their emotions, and people with high emotional intelligence are managing their emotions.
So there's a big difference there, and we can probably think of people in our lives that are one or the other.
That's right. Yeah. Yes, exactly. Fortunately, you can change, though.
So in everyday life, you're saying that emotional intelligence or emotional intelligence quotient is more important than your IQ or intelligence quotient?
Yes, it is in many ways. It's actually more related to happiness, because if you have high emotional intelligence, you tend to have very stable relationships, and relationships have a lot to do with how happy we are in life. And so because of that connection, it has a lot to do with our success and happiness. But also another connection. In the word emotion is the word motion. And if our emotions are based on what is true and accurate, it can powerfully motivate us to achieve our goals. And so that's why, as an employer, I'd much rather hire someone with average IQ, with high emotional intelligence, because they're going to be well motivated to be trained and learn, versus someone who might have a high IQ but low motivation, because they're actually probably not going to perform near as well as someone with the high emotional intelligence side of things.
Now, can we change our emotional intelligence? Can we grow it?
We can, yes. Fortunately, we can. Once we learn the principles of non-distorted thinking and how to know and understand our emotions and the emotions of others, we can dramatically improve our emotional intelligence. And our studies show it can start occurring significantly within 10 days after learning those principles.
Wow. What age can we teach our children even these principles?
Well, actually, we have programs for very young. You know, one of the things that can help out is that if we learn these principles as parents, we can actually help our children develop high emotional intelligence. And studies show that even at age 5 or 6, when a child actually knows how to delay gratification, that's a sign of higher emotional intelligence, and that will be directly related to how high their ACT scores are 10 or 11 years later, is their ability to delay gratification, which is one of the principles of emotional intelligence.
So it looks like it's really important.
It is important, even for kids.
For us to teach our children.
Yes, yeah.
After the break, we're in the kitchen, so stick around.
Oh no, gasoline has gone up again.
Again? This will work.
Hey, what are you doing putting water in the car?
Well, you were saying that gasoline's so expensive, yeah. And I agree. And so I just thought, you know, it's free at the station. We can just use water.
Well, that will never work. It's not flammable. It'll kill the engine. It just won't work. I'm sorry.
Oh, well, okay. Well, then we'll press the diesel button.
Diesel? That won't work either.
But it's cheaper.
Yeah.
And it runs trucks, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And it's flammable.
Yeah.
Well, if it runs a big old truck, surely it'll run a little old car like mine.
Yeah, but this car was designed to run on gasoline, not diesel, not water. It'll never work.
Oh, well, that's exactly my point. This is what we were designed to run on. This is the right fuel, but many people think that they can run their bodies on this fuel.
And this kind of fuel clogs up our bodies just like the wrong fuel clogs up our cars.
And the thing about this fuel is it's not just an engine that we're clogging up, which can be replaced. We clog our bodies, causing pain, suffering, and premature death.
And not only that, this fuel tastes a lot better than that fuel.
Well, I better put this where it belongs.
You better.
Now, eat the right fuel. Doctor's orders.
I'll eat to that.
Welcome back. For this special series, Phil and I wanted to bring you a special recipe. And so this is not one that you would make every day, but Phil, tell them what we're going to do this week.
Well, who would have expected dessert? And so we've got not just dessert, but a cheesecake, but a healthy cheesecake. So today we're making tofu cheesecake.
Yes, it's healthy with a little H, though, isn't it? A small
yes.
H. There's a little bit of sweetener in this. But
it's a much better alternative than the traditional.
Right. And so today, we're going to make which part of the cheesecake?
Well, today it's just going to be the crust. So it's going to be very simple. And for this crust, you're going to need 3 cups of granola, 2 tablespoons of honey, 6 tablespoons of unsweetened applesauce, and 2 teaspoons of coriander.
Interesting. So instead of scrunching graham crackers together, we're actually going to do another equally convenient thing.
Absolutely, and this is much better. Graham crackers have become, from a health food back 100 years ago, to becoming full of bleached flour and just kind of like standard flour and sugar. When it was reality, in reality, when it was first started, it was whole grains. So it used to be a health food. Now we have completely ruined it.
It's been Americanized.
Americanized, that's a great way
to put it. But it wasn't an American word, just American food to start with.
So this is going to have granola, and we're going to start by simply crushing this up in a blender. It's best to do it in portions, so to do it about 1 cup at a time.
All right.
And while I'm doing that, you're getting our next one going.
Well, that's easy, isn't it?
Very easy. You want to just get it into kind of a fine crumb.
And the lovely thing about this granola that we happen to be using, you could use any granola, is this doesn't have a lot of oil or sweetener. It's got honey, and it's gluten-free oats. So for someone who is going gluten-free. Here's a nice pastry.
And I think that's a terrific point because especially, like, it's easy to find sugar-laden granola that's on the market. So you can completely undo what we're trying to do, but to find a really good one, you're sticking to a healthier dessert.
Right.
All right, this is 2 cups. And you're putting in our other ingredients. And it's very simple. All you want to do is just put them in there, and then we're going to mix it together and then flatten it out to make it into our crust. So it's a very easy recipe. And this is one of those that's really going to wow people. Because it still tastes very good. They might be a little bit thrown off that it's not the traditional, but I bet a lot of people won't even really notice it.
And I noticed that you can replace oil that you might normally use in a pastry with applesauce, especially if it's a sweet dish that you're making. You, of course, wouldn't want to use applesauce if you're making a pie for, you know, a savory pie. But this is a great way to get that. I'll leave you to do that. Great way to get the fat down in the dish. And this pastry, of course, has some fat from the granola anyway, so it's still going to give you that nice full feeling.
And the applesauce, you're still getting the consistency that you need, and it's still going to stick together, so you're not losing any of that.
Right. This recipe, you could put, say, 3 tablespoons of oil, 3 tablespoons of water. Instead, we put 6 tablespoons of unsweetened applesauce. That's just begging for your fingers.
It is. This is one where you can get your hands in there and mix it up.
Yeah.
You just want to get it all together and all mixed up well. And it has the same consistency of a graham cracker crust, so it's no different.
Mm.
At least not with your expectations of a crust.
Right, yeah. Yeah, it's got that kind of cookie dough feeling.
And then you just want to smash it around a little bit. It's a little bit sticky. That's the ingredients, but
yep.
It's a little bit of the fun of it.
But after it comes out of the oven, it's going to be... And that's all there is to it. So we'll finish that off and get it ready to put on our topping, our filling, sorry. And for the next part in our series, we'll be adding the filling. Now back to Sol Pancake's Happiness Laboratory to see what comes first, happiness or success. So far, they've invited a bunch of volunteers into the studio to solve a puzzle, and half of them have watched a funny movie with snacks and a gift card, and the other half got no happiness priming. Then they all had to fix a candle to a vertical board in a way that would allow it to be lit safely and not drop wax on the table. Let's watch and see how they got on.
Anywhere on the corkboard?
Mm-hmm.
Am I okay to still eat?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Good luck.
All right. When should I begin?
Now. So, would the group we put in a good mood perform better than the control group? Let's find out.
I don't know how long this is going to take. There's not going to be win or anything like it. It's just
nothing
crazy like that. Okay.
We're not going to submit it through, like, structural tests or anything.
Okay.
No, it's okay.
Any like Jeopardy music or something.
But is it okay to jump on the board?
The board itself, the cork board?
Yes.
No.
No?
No.
Am I just gonna dissipate?
Can I tear this?
Yeah.
I can use a box too, right?
Let me see that candle burning. Yeah, you got it. Way to go.
Yay.
You melted the wax and stuck it directly on the corkboard. It's creative. I will give you that. It is not the answer.
What do you mean?
Well, if you were to light this, if the
eventually,
candle would melt down.
Yeah. That's going to happen however you do it.
Not necessarily.
Okay.
You got it.
I got it.
Woo. Whoa, that was close. That was a buzzer beater. It's definitely interesting. I think I'm safe in saying the simplest solution we've seen all day. This satisfies all the requirements that we gave you.
Yes.
Definitely. Congratulations.
Just don't touch it.
Yeah, let me very carefully.
I don't want to burn the place down.
Well, what do we have here?
Nothing.
It's I wouldn't say that.
True, not nothing, but a bit far from the goal. I asked Dr. Nedley, author of the book Lost Art of Thinking, why he chose that title.
Unfortunately, it has become a lost art. Critical thinking, which is something we can measure, is at an all-time low. In fact, studies have shown that even if you go to an Ivy League school and you're there for 4 years, there's a very decent chance that your critical thinking has not improved one bit.
Really? After 4 years?
After 4 years at a highly accredited Ivy League school. And in fact, those that are doing the research are saying that our educational system is broken. This educational system teaches you what others are teaching you, you know, as far as their knowledge base, so you can memorize things. But to be actually able to think on your own and to think accurately and objectively and creatively, our educational system is failing to a large degree in that area. And so it has become a lost art. And so what it's shown is, even though you might have a very high educational system, even have PhDs and that sort of thing, that you're not really able to think independently and objectively.
So what do you mean by critical thinking? Give us examples of critical thinking.
Well, critical thinking, you know, it sounds, you know, maybe, you know, high end. But some examples of critical thinking would to be able to reconcile conflicting reports of an event that happened from different, you know, people who were there. So you're listening to one and then you're listening to another, and an objective critical thinker can be able to put all this together and actually determine what happened. If you don't have critical thinking, you're not really able to do that, and you're going to come up with an incorrect story. Another example would be to be able to recognize political spin, you know, when someone actually puts a spin on it, and to be able to recognize that ahead of time. Most people actually can't, believe it or not. They might in certain sensitive areas that they're trained to do so, but to be able to actually separate objective reporting from political spin, it's very difficult for people in this age where thinking has become a lost art to be able to do that.
Wow. Now, which part of our brain is involved in that critical thinking process?
It's actually the frontal lobe of the brain. And so this is the analytical portion of the brain. It's also our creative portion of the brain as well.
What else happens in the frontal lobe? What else is it important for? Because if this part of our brain is becoming impaired, is it becoming, you know, are there other areas? Other functions of that?
There are other functions of the frontal lobe. The frontal lobe is to be the manager of really our entire brain, as well as the manager of our emotions. So when the frontal lobe goes down, our limbic system, which is our lower brain, overpowers it. And that's when we are being managed by our emotions instead of our emotions being managed by us, which is what a balanced brain will do. And so that's why a balanced brain, even among children, as we mentioned earlier with the marshmallow test, you know, you can have, you know, one marshmallow now, or if you wait a while, you'll be able to get two marshmallows later. Those with a balanced frontal lobe that like marshmallows, they'll be able to delay that gratification to be able to get more later. And that's when we know the frontal lobe is working a little better.
Yes, I wonder how many adults would pass the marshmallow test. Now, You talk about emotional wellness. What is it? Just describe it for us.
Well, emotional wellness is actually knowing our emotions. Now, part of knowing our emotions is not just identifying what we're feeling, which is part of it. So in other words, if we're feeling angry, it's good to be able to recognize that we're angry. If we are feeling, you know, sad, we should be able to recognize that. Or if we're feeling, you know, bitter, or, you know, if we're feeling calm, or, you know, there's a whole array of emotions. And sometimes people are so poor at recognizing that, we actually give them an emotions list, you know, with a page there so they can circle what they're actually feeling. But then it goes deeper. That's the easy part. The part that isn't so easy is, why are you feeling that way? Now, what the average person will say, well, that's pretty easy because this person just ticked me off and did whatever. And so we tend to blame others for the way we're feeling. But that actually is not quite true. That has an impact. But it's our thoughts about what they did that actually cause our emotions. So it's our thoughts that cause our emotions and behavior.
So you're saying our critical thinking and our emotional wellness are very closely tied.
They are closely tied, yes. And so that's why the thought part is so important, because we can actually train our thoughts to be more accurate and produce healthier emotions.
So we're driving this now towards happiness. That's going to be our goal as we're talking today.
Yes.
Now, I know that you've mentioned before on other shows about the frontal lobe also being the seat of spirituality and the will.
Yes.
So if critical thinking, emotional wellness are in here, spirituality looks like it might come along for the ride as well.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. In fact, studies show the frontal lobe is the seat of spirituality, morality, and the will. It's actually where our willpower is at. It's our chooser. But there's a practical aspect to religion and spirituality that many people ignore. A lot of times, you know, people assume that are non-religious, that religious people, you know, are doing this just so that they can maybe, you know, have a hereafter, you know, what happens after life is over
policy.
With. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'm doing this so that I can actually maybe, you know, live forever after I die. And that may be one aspect to religion, but actually there's a very practical aspect to religion, and that is a good, consistent spirituality will enhance our frontal lobe and enhance our ability to manage our emotions and improve our emotional intelligence. And this is something.
And increase happiness. Then,
and increase happiness,
yeah.
That's why religious people are actually been shown to be happier than non-religious people. Significantly
right?
happier.
Really?
And it has to do with this, what's going on in the frontal lobe.
Now, your book does include spirituality. It does take examples from the Bible. So do you have to be a Christian? Do you have to even have a spiritual aspect to your life to benefit from your book?
Well, you can benefit from it just from learning distorted ways of thinking and correcting those ways of thinking, whether you're religious or not religious. But there's going to be a significant advantage if you actually incorporate sound biblical principles in helping the frontal lobe of the brain. And so, yes, you'll benefit either way, but actually reading about those examples, studying about those examples and some of those principles will independently help the frontal lobe.
So are you ready to optimize your frontal lobe function? Before the break, here's a great place to start. The oldest book in the Bible is thought to be the book of Job. It's about a man described as being perfect, upright, and the greatest man in all the East, a man who feared God and shunned evil. He was married with 10 grown children and owned a huge ranch filled with livestock. In Scripture, we're given a character study of a man so outstanding that God used him as a case study. Satan sought permission from God to do his worst to Job in order to prove that Job's integrity was conditional upon his circumstances. The next day, he lost all his livestock, and his children were all killed. What did Job do? He dressed in garments of mourning, sat down in dust and ashes, and said, "I was born naked with no possessions, and it'll be the same when I die. The Lord gives, and the Lord takes away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. Satan was so frustrated. He got permission to harm Job physically, and the next day, Job broke out in painful, pus-filled, disfiguring boils. He now sat on the ground, scraping his open sores, a social outcast. His wife told him to curse God and die, to which Job responded, "How can we accept all the good things from God and not accept the problems?" His so-called friends arrived to watch and tell him that God was obviously punishing him for all the sins he must surely have done. Knowing this was not the case, Job replied, "Though he slay me, yet I will trust him and present my case before him." I'm sure Satan was super frustrated at the end of the story when Job and God have this incredible heart-to-heart that you can read in the final chapters of the book. I really wish I had Job's response whenever challenges come my way. Do you wish that too? Instead of events creating emotional reactions and behaviors, God wants us to be like Job, seeing the world through a framework of truth that keeps us calm and steady and exonerates our God. Welcome back. Sean's here and he's brought a chair. This is really exciting. Hi, Sean.
Just a chair. How are you?
I'm good. I'm looking forward to sitting down.
No, we're not going to be sitting down.
Oh, we're
in
not?
This chair.
Uh-oh.
We sit down all the time. So why not use one of the tools that is at our disposal all the time, right?
Yeah.
So the chair.
I agree.
So let's get warmed up first.
Okay.
Okay? So we're going to be doing some upper body, some lower body, and then some upper body again using the chair. If you're in the office, it's here, you have to use it. You're limited for time, use it. We're gonna show you some ways to use it.
Great.
Okay? So the first one, we're just gonna go into squats, set your timer for about 30 seconds. And these are called speed squats. I call them air squats, speed squats, same thing, all right? What you wanna do is get down, pop up. You're intentionally moving fast. You can start off, you keep on going. Now the beauty of squats is that you start off high, and then as you get more limber, you go a little bit lower. Put the weight in your heel, 3, 2, and 1. Do that, heart rate's up, you feel good. You kind of feel prepared to go into it, right?
Right.
So we have our chair, you're at work, you have about 15, 20 minutes to work out. First exercise, we're gonna work the triceps, okay?
All
right. So go right into dips. Nope,
okay.
No sitting, I promise. There are two ways to do this. The first is have your knees bent. Number two is have your legs straight. The only downside of having your legs straight is that you may feel a little bit of tension on your knee. So just semi-bend it just a little bit right there, and then you can go into your dips, all right? Set your timer for about 30 seconds. Go all the way up. Now the goal here is to not rush. Do not rush the tricep dips. These are great exercises to work those arms, firm it up, keep it nice and tight. You know those hello goodbyes?
Yeah.
Right, let's get rid of those hello goodbyes. 3, 2, and 1. Perfect. You could have a seat. I call them hello goodbyes because someone says, someone says hello, goodbye.
All at the same time.
All at the same time. All right. So you're going to stand up. No sitting at the job.
All right.
All right. We're going to do a isolated lunge, single leg lunge. We're going to point the toe in the chair. Keep the chest pointed up. All right. Make sure that the chest points forward, eyes are forward, and all you're gonna do is bend. Back up. All the way forward. Chest is forward. Get about 10 to 15 reps. Feel good. Go all the way down. The knee doesn't go in front of your sneaker.
Yep.
And come back up. I'll let you try it.
Woo.
I know it's a challenge.
This looks tough.
It is a tough one, but what is tough will make you stronger sometimes. So take a nice step forward. There you go. Hold my hand for a second. There you go. 3, 2, and 1. Keep it up. Now go. Perfect. If you're having difficulty, you can use a broomstick just to kind of give you some balance. But you're still going to work that quad. Get the other side.
Switch.
Yep.
Okay.
Set that timer for about 45 seconds or 30 seconds on each side. Isolate. If you're having problems with balance, use that broomstick, any little pole, or another chair to give you some balance.
Yeah.
All right, 3, 2, and 1. Good job. So you worked your triceps. You've isolated your quads, right?
Right.
Now we're going to work the chest, okay? So we're going to hold right here, the sides of the chair, nice and firm, and come all the way down. All right. Once you get up to the top, you're squeezing your triceps, but you're working the chest as well, okay?
Right.
So try for about 3 reps. Keep the body nice and firm. 1. Make sure you're breathing. There you go. Come on, give me 1 more. All the way down and push. Good job. There you go. So set your timer.
That's too hard. You can do it on the top of the chair.
But it's all about the challenge, right?
Yes.
It is nothing better than challenging yourself in order to make a change. If you want to do the same thing over and over again, you're going to get the same results, right? Yeah. So challenge yourself here. So you got your dips. You got your isolated lunges. You got your push-up press. Set your timer 15 minutes, all right? Do as much as you can for 30 seconds each exercise and keep on repeating it. Hydrate, keep on going. You got 15 minutes. You may need to take a shower afterwards, but you'll be fine. All right, let's stretch it out.
Okay.
Okay, so you've worked the upper body. Let's work these triceps. I'm gonna turn my back and show you a great way to stretch out the triceps right here. Reach for the middle of your back, all right? Stretch the tricep by putting your hand right here. Stretch, touch the middle of your back. Stretch it out, okay? That's one exercise to get the triceps, all right? Mm. Another one to get for the quads is to go into a really deep squat, all right? So right here, take your elbow, put it right in the inside of your thigh and push apart, get a good stretch. In 3, 2, and 1. Come nice and slow. Open and close. The chest, you worked it. Good way is to open up the chest cavity. Contract, open it up. In 3, 2, and 1. And you're done.
Thanks, Sean. You just turned our inactivity into activity.
That's activity.
Yeah.
That's
great.
Good job.
Which is better for your bones, dairy or soy milk? As we age, our risk of developing osteoporosis increases, and our dietary choices can make a big difference. The Adventist Health Study found women drinking milk at least once a day had bones that were just as strong whether they drank soy milk or dairy milk. Those drinking milk less than once a day had a significantly higher risk of osteoporosis. Maintaining strong bones is another ageless advantage.
Now it's time for your questions. Nicholas asks, anytime I eat fried eggs, I get sores in my mouth. What should I do? Well, the obvious thing is to stop eating fried eggs. But if you want to keep eating eggs, then you might want to boil them or poach them and see if the same thing happens. You know, just get rid of the oil. Now, when it comes to mouth ulcers, some people find that they subside just by taking a small spoon of coconut oil each day. You don't need a great big tablespoon, just a small sip. Deborah asks, my daughter's breastfeeding my granddaughter who's 3 years old. Is that normal? Well, it's not abnormal, and in fact, in many developing countries, this is very much the norm. Just be sure that your granddaughter is growing well and eating a well-balanced diet in addition to her milk. Laurie from Oregon asks, every winter it seems that we get cracks on our fingers that split open. Are there any foods we can eat that will help avoid those cracks? Well, I get the same thing, and it's really painful. So it's just really hard to avoid with the extremes of temperature. But be sure that you're getting enough omega-3 fats and not getting any trans fats and not too much of saturated fats or omega-6 fats. Try keeping your hands well moisturized, you know, use a moisturizer as much as you can, and avoid washing your hands in hot water. That's a real temptation when it's cold outside and your fingers get cold, but just use tepid water, just body temperature water. If there's no visible dirt on your hands, you might even choose to avoid soap and water and just use a hand sanitizer, which is actually more effective at cleansing our hands than the soap and water. At night, you might want to put a natural lip salve on those cracks, cover them over, and that will encourage healing when you're not using your hands through the night. Thanks for those questions. Remember, you can text, email via the website, Facebook us at Go Healthy for Good, or leave a phone message. Now, let's make nutrition practical. Nearly everyone has heard of the grapefruit diet. It's been around for at least 80 years. But the weight loss associated with the 12-day calorie restriction plan has nothing to do with grapefruit. A sensible eating plan is a much better option. Having said that, grapefruit are full of vitamin C and folate. They're rich in pectin, which acts as a bulking agent, and it binds to bile acids in the colon, reducing cholesterol. If you take medications, be sure to check, though, that they don't react with grapefruit before you eat one. Red varieties have more lycopene, known to protect the skin from sun damage and to protect against prostate cancer. And 4 ounces contains only 40 calories. Bon appetit. Now back to Dr. Nedley to find out how much of IQ and EQ come from our parents and how much improvement is possible.
Well, IQ, there is a large inheritance section, but IQ, there's a lot of environmental aspects as well.
Is that right?
And we can enhance our IQ significantly as well. In fact, we just came out with ways to do that in a product called Optimize Your Brain. But emotional intelligence, there's a genetic component as well to that. But emotional intelligence is much more learned than it is inherited. And so no matter what your background is, it's an area that can be significantly improved upon.
Mm. But you must learn some of your emotional responses from your parents. So are they partly handed down that way just by role modeling or observation?
Sure, yes. The environment you grow up in does have a lot to play in regards to your emotional intelligence, as well as even the culture that you grew up in can have a role to play as well. And, you know, even what you're eating can have a role to play, and some lifestyle things. But the most important aspect has to do with our beliefs, our evaluation of events, the way we think about problems, and our silent self-talk.
Okay.
That's the most critical aspect in regards to emotional intelligence.
So it's what's all happening inside.
That's right.
And how we're processing.
Yes.
But, you know, sometimes when children are traumatized, they seem to freeze at that emotion, that age that they're at, from an emotional perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Is that true? What's happening physically in the brain?
Well, what's happening physically is the trauma and abuse is stored in the amygdala, and so that starts to rev up the limbic system. The amygdala is kind of the bottom of the limbic system there, and when the limbic and emotional systems start to rev up, the frontal lobe has a tendency to go down. And so that's why they tend to have more emotional problems, is a result, a result of the trauma. Now, it doesn't have to be that way. And if they are actually, they can actually live with a balanced brain even despite having trauma, so that the trauma doesn't have a permanent, you know, impact on them. But for most, they don't know how to do that, and so the trauma actually does produce some bad results.
Right. So are you saying that at the time of the trauma, you can prevent that long term, or even after the trauma has done it,
even
you can
after.
Actually fix it?
Yeah. Okay. After, it would be good to try to fix it within a few weeks.
Oh.
And unfortunately, a lot of kids that are traumatized today, particularly with sexual abuse being at an all-time high, they don't say anything about it. And so there's no real opportunity to help them until the limbic system is pretty out of control and a lot of consequences occurring. And so even then, of course, they can be helped. But it would have been far better to be able to help them earlier in this process.
Mm. So how do you go about helping them?
When we're dealing with, you know, cases where there's it's complicated by depression and anxiety and lack of being able to function well.
So those are the long-term consequences.
Those are the long-term consequences,
right.
Yeah, exactly. Then we actually give them what's called the spa therapy first.
Mm-hmm.
So they come and they get the right nutrition for their brain. They get the right exercise.
So you're talking inpatient care.
We're talking residential care.
Residential.
And then the counseling comes after, within several days, and then we use it all in a comprehensive approach. But yeah, our average, the emotional intelligence in a program such as that, will improve from below average to in the top 20 percentile of the nation.
So you can change your EQ that much?
That much.
That short a time?
In that short a time.
Because we're talking 10 days.
That's 10 days. So, but that's a comprehensive program. And so the gratifying thing is they not only have no depression or anxiety, but they're now poised for more success than people who've never suffered from it once they learn the principles of emotionally healthy living.
Amazing. And they're free from the trauma of their childhood as well.
That's right.
That's a gift.
Yes.
That is such a gift. Now, if environment, you're saying environment teaches EQ, does TV have a... impact?
It does, yeah. Unfortunately, most forms of television, which are not the type that you're watching right now, because most forms of television are entertainment television. Entertainment television, with its rapid scene of reference change, actually suppresses the frontal lobe of the brain, and it tends to rev up the limbic system. And so studies are very clear that entertainment television is going to worsen your emotional intelligence.
So turn off entertainment TV and turn on your brain. We'll be back with more after a short break. Now back to Soul Pancake's happiness experiment to find out if happiness improves success or if it's the other way around. Half of their human guinea pigs had fun, food, and a gift to induce happiness, and the other group got nothing. Then they had to fix a candle to a vertical board in a way that would allow it to be lit safely and not drop wax on the table. Let's see the outcome.
Do you feel like you're better at coming up with different options when you're in a good mood?
I would say so. My mind is just more expanded when I'm in a good mood. It kind of helps me to just breathe and think about it more instead of just trying to like force it to get done.
Do you think success leads to happiness or happiness leads to success?
Ah, the age-old question.
Success is when preparation meets opportunity. So to answer your question, I think it's all relevant in terms of success. Everybody has their own opinion what success is.
Does success lead to happiness, or does happiness lead to success?
Obviously, if you're happy, then you're probably going to be more successful. And everybody has a different definition of success. Mm-hmm. So if you're happy and you're doing what you love, hey, you're successful. So it just depends on your own definition of success. So I think happiness has to come first.
Do you think success leads to happiness or happiness leads to success?
If you're happier, you probably think more clearly, more optimistically, and then you have better chances at success.
What are the results? We found that the group we subjected to positive affectivity on average solved it 14% faster than the control group. Now, there's no way to know for sure if the people we brought in for our experimental group were just naturally better problem solvers to begin with. Plus, we had a very small sample size, so the results aren't bulletproof. But take it for what it's worth. In fact, I'll even let you in on a little secret. I'm not a real scientist. Felt good to get that off my chest. So, go on then. Be happy.
What if we're not happy?
Well, it's funny you should ask that, because I actually have 4 episodes down here that can help you flip the switch. I'm Julian, and this has been The Science of Happiness.
So if emotional intelligence promotes happiness, and happiness promotes success, then let's learn how to improve emotional intelligence through cognitive behavioral therapy. I asked Dr. Natalie about the core tenets of cognitive behavioral therapy, or CBT.
The tenets are what we call the ABCs of CBT, which is the abbreviation for cognitive behavioral therapy. And the A is the activating event. Some people call it's the awareness. It's when, you know, situations are occurring and you're aware of emotions. And so that's the A part. Mm. The B part is your belief, and the C part is the consequence. So first there's an emotional consequence, then there's a behavioral consequence. Now the difference between CBT and traditional psychotherapy is traditional psychotherapy goes straight from A to C. It leaves the B out. And so it basically states the reason why you are the way you are emotionally is because of what's happened to you in your life.
So like that childhood trauma.
That's right. Where cognitive behavioral therapy, you know, still looks at the A's, but it looks at the present B's. Those are the beliefs. And those are things that we can change now. And so cognitive behavioral therapy spends a lot of time in regards to how you're thinking now, and it helps you to be able to think rationally instead of irrationally.
So you can look at a memory and change the framework of that memory by changing your beliefs.
Exactly.
About it.
Exactly. We'll spend time on the present beliefs too, but some of those present beliefs might come about as a result of your automatic thoughts that occurred back when you might have been abused or traumatized.
Mm. Now that must take a lot of effort and a lot of energy to alter your beliefs, and to change your thinking. How long does it take?
Well, actually, you know, we told you about our 10-day program.
Mm.
It takes less than that.
Really?
if we're really dedicated to, you know, we call it a mental health boot camp,
right.
As it
so
were.
So it's an all-day, every day.
So, yeah, it's an all-day, every day. So it can be that quick. But in our community-based program, we spend a couple hours at it once a week for 8 weeks, and that can make a significant difference. So it doesn't take as long as you might think in order to do this. But, of course, the client has some practice sessions to do and a little bit of homework to do in between times so that they can start more habitually thinking rationally.
It must feel weird at first, because you were talking about, run through again the four things that you said. One of them was self-talk, because we're doing that constantly. That
yeah.
must feel very strange.
Yeah, our beliefs, our evaluation of events, mm-hmm. the way we think about problems, and our silent self-talk.
Wow. That's fundamentally who we are, isn't it? And we need to just tweak that.
Yes.
Now, is it are those tweaks based on truth?
Oh, absolutely. It actually won't work if it's not based on truth. It can't be based on fantasy. So we can't be telling ourselves things that are not true. Those things might make us feel better for the short term, but they're going to set us up for a lot of long-term problems. And so we actually help them to think thoughts that are objectively true and non-polarized.
Which is where the critical thinking comes in.
That's right.
We need to be objective and rational.
Exactly.
So this is all about teaching people how to think.
Yes.
And now, there must be a lot of practice initially. How long does it take for someone to feel like this is their own? You know, because initially it must take a lot of motivation, a lot of self-monitoring
mm-hmm.
before it becomes a part of you. How long is that?
If you're spending, you know, some dedicated time every week on this, it could take 20 weeks, you know, before it feels like it's your own.
Mm.
It can take less than that. And so,
but we're talking about months,
right?
Probably.
Yes.
Yeah. Although that initial 10-day
it can give you a big boost. So significant difference in 10 days, but 10 days is not necessarily enough to make it habitual. You can go back to your old patterns of thinking if you don't continue to practice. And so it takes some practice. But the nice thing about it is, after this becomes habitual, I mean, you don't have to practice anymore. And you can be thinking true and accurate thoughts on a consistent basis, and also correcting when you do tend to get distorted thoughts, correcting immediately before it causes a problem.
Are you ready to improve your emotional intelligence? Then watch for the ABCs of CBT. Learn to spot A for activating events that trigger emotions, recognize those emotions, challenge the B for beliefs that are creating the emotional reaction. Those beliefs are incorrect, reconstruct them in a truthful way before responding with a C for consequence. In part two of this series, we'll look at common errors in thinking that get us into trouble. That's all from me today. Thanks for joining us on Go Healthy for Good. I'll see you then.